Because I care so much, the ups are really high, but the downs are also super low. I was doing the math. I worked like 90 hours in 6 days. And I was like, okay, that's 15 hours a day.
Damn, Pedro. I'm freaking inspired right now.
Out all the shit sandwiches I could be eating, like, this is definitely one that I'm gladly eating right now. Don't quote me, please.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. Great to have you here again. Today, I am interviewing / having a conversation with Pedro Paiva, who is the head of operations here at Yes Theory. So fun to talk to, brilliant mind, and pretty much the full organizer behind the scenes of Yes Theory. With this conversation, I wanted to give you a look into the person and the people who are really helping us behind the scenes, making everything that you see happen. The conversation starts off with Pedro and I diving into who he is, what he's done in the past, how he ended up at Yes Theory. Then we go into a little bit of what goes on behind the scenes, a lot of what people don't know about. And then it gets pretty deep. We go pretty deep and talk about stuff that he's struggling with, that I'm struggling with, and topics that I think will be helpful for anybody watching. And yeah, if you're a fan of Yes Theory, you'll be a huge fan of this conversation. So stoked for you to listen to it, and I'll leave it at that. Enjoy. All right. Well, here we are, ladies and gentlemen. Happy to be here with everybody. Today we have Pedro Paiva. Is that how you say it?
I mean, are you trying to say my name in Portuguese? Or? I mean, yeah, you could say it like that. The normal way would be Pedro Paiva.
Paiva.
Yeah, that's okay. That's pretty good. Yeah. It's okay, man. I would only expect that after 2 years, but whatever.
No, perfect.
I'm kidding.
Do you have a middle name?
Yeah, Nordskog.
Oh, so that is your middle name. Gotcha. Yeah. And you use that one for...
Yeah, I never... profiles. I mean, I've always used Pedro Paiva for work purposes, but at the same time, there are a billion Pedro Paivas in Brazil.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
there are a lot. That's a common name,
Paiva? Yeah, it's pretty common. Okay. So I normally use Nordskog as... It's different. And, cool. Yeah.
And it's
Norwegian.
From Norway.
Yeah.
Because your background is somewhat Norwegian.
I mean, you can see it from my blonde hair, my blue eyes.
You're
yes.
6'5" stature.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. My mom's side of his family is from Norway.
Okay, gotcha. And so maybe that's a cool place to start is the fact that you're not really from here. I mean, you spent some time in the U.S. growing up, but that you came from a land far, far away.
Land far, far away in Brazil, down under.
And I think you might have been when we put out the application for head of operations. I think you were probably, from what I remember, the only one from South America.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, you know, it's such a, even the consideration that you would come out here and work with us is, it was like, is he willing to leave Brazil to come all the way to LA? Like that, that alone felt like a whole leap that we had to get through. So maybe just to like backtrack a little bit, because I think my goal in doing this and having this conversation is I feel like, you know, people see the Yes Theory videos, they see 15 to 20 minutes every 2 weeks. They sometimes see one of us on a podcast. On the second channel on Seek, they see, you know, a few members come in, but there's minimal introduction just because the videos are really fast paced and we have to get to the story. But I think there is a lot of curiosity about who we work with every day, who's here, where they come from, what their personalities are like, what they like. So part of me doing this podcast is showing that side of Yes Theory, because in my opinion, it's like a very interesting and human side that is far less like sexy and epic than some of the Yes Theory videos, but I think just as beautiful. So you're the first one on the team that I'm talking to. Yeah, it's cool. I'm excited to, I mean, I know a lot of your story, but I'm excited for our audience to get to know you a little better and talk about how you got here, where you come from, and what you do.
Yeah, definitely. I would say that it's not that it isn't sexy, like a sexy part of the world. It's just a different part
of
the world.
Are you saying Brazil?
No, I'm saying what
role.
I do specifically.
Oh, your role.
Of
Yeah.
Brazil is definitely a sexier part of the world. But yeah, I mean, where do I start? First, I mean, I am born and raised in Brazil. I had 2 years that I lived in the U.S. when I was younger, moved here with my family. And yeah, I mean, I have always throughout my process growing up, always been very connected to this idea that the world can be different if you intentionally put yourself out there. And I think I was fortunate enough at 13 to kind of discover that through a personal experience that I went through with an NGO in Brazil. It's an international NGO called CISV. And it really was the trigger that opened my mind and said, hey, maybe I can do something different of my life if I intentionally put efforts into trying to create different outcomes. And I felt that that was one of the moments that kind of triggered a domino effect. And when I look back, I'm saying that that was the moment that I really understood something that was powerful. And that I think what 15 years later led me to see the job application that Yes Theory was hiring an American or someone in the US to be the head of operations. And at the same time that already seen some barriers that potentially could take me away from that opportunity, seeing also the possibilities and the things that were, that would make sense for me to be and do that. So I, as I was growing up, I grew up in a city that's close to São Paulo, kind of did the traditional route of like going to university, studying a lot, getting into the university that I wanted to study what I wanted, kind of like in Brazil. So kind of like doing that normal path that you're told to do. And in that path, also finding that, hey, it's people kind of lie to us in the process. Like they say that you have to go and study hard to get into the best university possible, to study what you want. And then after that, like job's guaranteed, you're good. And you're just continuing on with your life. And it's basically like, okay, after you get into university, you're done. Like everything is set. And as I was doing that and going through that process, I saw lots of things of like, hey, I got into the university that I wanted, but nobody here knows what they're doing. Like,
in terms of the students or the teachers?
Both. All I mean, I went there with an expectation of what I was going to see in that environment and learn in that environment. And I was seeing that first, the approach that university was bringing, and I studied business. The approach that university was bringing to business was completely different from the approach that I wanted to give to business. So there was this dissociation that I had to make of like the effort and the intention that people are teaching me something isn't the same intention that I want to apply it. And it's hard for you at like 17, 18 to be able to like, huh, wait, these are two separate things. And also the people around me, which I thought would be very driven, which I thought would be very connected to world issues and things like that, which were my interests. They really didn't know what they also wanted to do. I don't know here in the US if you have this, but in Brazil, you kind of get people that study business or people that don't exactly know what they want. And they just go with something that's very broad that can kind of, they can kind of move along afterwards. So,
I mean, do you think it's also normal when you're 18, 19 to not fully know what you want?
I mean, I think that you, obviously, throughout time, you get to know things better. But I think this idea of fully knowing is just unrealistic. Like, we're not computers that basically you either know or you don't know. It's not binary. What is fully knowing? Like, that's something that doesn't really exist for me. And that I choose not to believe in that concept specifically. Like, what I try to look at my life and make my decisions on is, like, what feels right on this moment with what I have in terms of like background experience and what I feel the future is going to hold from me making that decision. And that was what led me to business. That was afterwards what led me to continue on in university, even though I was very frustrated with the world around me. That was what led me to start my first business in Brazil to tackle the same problem that I was seeing in my frustration towards university and trying to help other kids all around different high schools in Brazil to be able to also deal with this moment that is super hard and ask better questions.
So the business that you started was pretty much a direct response to that frustration.
Definitely.
And it was to help people kind of find their path, like find their truths in a way. That's a way of putting it.
Exactly. So I think to kind of align on things. Like, we had this group of friends and these groups of people that are very frustrated with university after they get in, right? Mm. But we also have this humongous amount of students that are in high school being taught what they can envision, and that when they get to university, they're completely frustrated with what they find, right? And that was my case, mm-hmm. and the case of a friend of mine that's called Mark. And he was the one that actually thought of, like, what if, like, what would I do differently if I knew in high school what I know now being in university? Mm. And he started structuring and working through, like, how could we teach and talk about these specific points about, like, what's your vision of success for you? Like, what makes you happy? What doesn't make you happy? Mm. Where do you feel like you're more yourself mm-hmm. in life? And what would it look like if we were able to bring this discussion to high school so people could make that decision being connected to this point for them, right? Mm-hmm. And he started kind of working through that. And early on, I saw what he was doing. And he's a very creative guy. Mark is a very creative guy, but lacked a lot of structure. And creative in a different way. And I do like structuring and kind of getting things off the ground. So from the start, I kind of joined as a head of operations to structure what this would look like and kind of transform it a little bit more into a company. Hmm. And that was kind of like my first experience right out of university of actually bringing these workshops that we created and this experience that we created to high schools in Brazil, all around Brazil, to get people to connect a little bit more with their questions. And it was also in that time that I met Yes Theory. So
that you found us online.
Yeah, that I found Yes Theory online. I was still in Brazil. I was pushed the video. I think it was one of the first videos of Project 30.
Oh, wow. So early days.
Really early days. I think Yes Theory was under 50,000 subscribers.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize it was that early.
So it was really, really early. And it's like it's serendipitous.
Serendipitous.
Mm-hmm. That's a hard word for me.
It's okay. It's not your first language.
And basically, the way that I was feeling about it was when I saw it and I was understanding a little bit more, as you guys were also understanding yourself and the channel and everything of the message that we were putting out into the world. And I say we because the feeling was, oh, these guys are kind of trying to do the same thing that we are, mm-hmm. helping people live more meaningful lives, mm-hmm. but in a completely different way. Mm-hmm. While we're going through the route of, like, let's meet them physically in the place that they are and do an in-depth experience of like 15 hours together, mm-hmm. they're going on a different route of let's go more globally, like let's go broad, mm-hmm. and bring snippets of these experiences and this philosophy to them in a really entertaining way. Mm-hmm. So it was very interesting. Because when we had our moments in Provi and kind of were struggling.
Provi is the name of the business, by the way.
Provi is the name of the business. Mm-hmm. And we're struggling to kind of like find a way forward. We would always watch the videos to kind of get inspired. Nice. to feel that we were not alone trying to do that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, it was that process of like developing that. And then after that business, also continuing on the operations role in different places that I ended up working on. That led me to in 2021, August 8th.
Wow. Do you remember the exact date?
Yeah, I do.
That's cute.
I was scrolling through LinkedIn, and I've told you this and I tell everybody this because it makes no sense. My LinkedIn was completely in Portuguese. Completely in Portuguese. I was not looking for a role. I was not looking for a job. And I got a push notification from LinkedIn saying, hey, Yes Theory is hiring a head of operations. It was, I think it was a Sunday or something. I'm not exactly sure.
Was it an ad?
It wasn't an ad. It was like a notification.
Just a random notification.
Yeah. I mean, I followed Yes Theory on LinkedIn. Maybe it was because of that. So it wasn't fully random.
Yeah.
But like to think that a notification for a job that was initially for someone in the US, completely in English, was pushed to a LinkedIn that was completely in Portuguese, not looking for a job.
Yeah.
Was a bit crazy. And as I was kind of seeing it, I was in scroll mode that you're like, okay, yeah, scrolling. Oh, Yes Theory is hiring a head of operations. Cool. Continue scrolling. Like I didn't really think much of that moment. And it was talking with, my girlfriend back then, my wife now, that she was like, I think you'd be really good at that.
Shout out Thais.
That I mean, pushed me to actually applying and trying to grab you guys' attention. Mm-hmm. And then it was just the process of, like, after the moment that I decided that I wanted to apply, I knew it was possible. Mm-hmm. Like, I knew it was possible, even though you guys were hiring American, like, not American specific, but someone in the US. I knew that first I had something to add. So maybe I wasn't the best fit. Or I wasn't what exactly you guys were needing at the moment, but I knew I had something to add. And it was the process, like the hardest part was just reaching you guys and being able to kind of make a connection. Cause I was like, okay, if they're hiring a head of operations, who's looking through the applications, man? Cause that would probably be someone from operations. Yeah. And I was like, okay, I have to get their attention in a different way.
And so you put together this application.
So I put together the application. I submitted it because I did not know how long the job posting would be open. But I knew that probably that application wouldn't be the avenue to go for if I wanted to draw you guys' attention. The first thing on the application itself was I did not want, because you guys were asking for the person to develop a strategy.
Yeah.
And I did not want to send you like a Google Doc. Like I didn't want to send you a Google presentation. Because I knew everybody was going to do that. So I actually hired a graphic designer to draw the strategy that I wanted to create, to basically present something that was different in the case that you guys opened my application, which was already super hard because there were so many people that I'm sure were applying. And then besides that, I also started another strategy that was like, okay, let's test the 6 degrees of separation and see, like, who do I know that knows someone that knows someone that knows someone that knows somebody in Yes Theory. And it was actually through that process that I went into LinkedIn, tried seeing, like, do I have any connections in common with the Yes Theory guys? I had none, but I did have a connection to someone that was helping out in Seek. That was Adam.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So Adam was from the same NGO that I participated when I was 13.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
And we had several friends in common because of that.
Dude, yeah.
I remember exactly, like, I saw him. He was a community manager for Seek. And I was like, okay, this is a pretty good connection. And we had 3 common connections in LinkedIn. But when I looked in Facebook, we had 50. And I was like,
that's my guy.
Yes, that's my guy. And the first person I talked to out of those 50 that could connect me to him, which was Pedro, a friend of mine from Brazil also. He had spoken to him that day.
Really?
So it was that fresh.
Damn.
And basically that was how it happened. Like, I talked with Adam. He didn't know much about the head of operations position and kind of how the process was going. But talking to him, he told me that Samir was helping out.
Yeah.
And that was insider information because nobody else, and that wasn't out into the world, that Samir was helping hire that person in that role. Yeah. So I reached Samir directly having that insider info of like, hey, I know you're helping to hire, like, the head.
Message him on LinkedIn.
I'll message him on LinkedIn because I saw all the other platforms that he had. They were all getting more engagement and more people either commenting or liking or everything. And LinkedIn was one that he was posting fairly regularly, but getting fewer likes. So I was like, I think that's the avenue that I see that he's appearing there. So he's showing up because he's posting regularly, but not as many people are probably trying to grab his attention. And that was where I reached out and I was like, hey, I know that you're hiring for head of operations in Yes Theory. I kind of feel that I have what it takes. And I just want to know more of the moment that you guys are going through, what you guys need. And through that conversation, afterwards, I think he liked what he saw because he introduced me to you. And then afterwards, from you to Thomas, then to Amar, then back to you. And then it was that process of, I think it was 6 months of conversations almost. Well, a little less, from August to December.
That's how you came out here and we met.
In person. And then it happened.
Oh, man. It's so interesting hearing the whole, like, your side of it, because I've heard a little bit, but not to that extent of, like, finding these specific people and connecting to Samir that way. Like, I thought, for some reason, Samir just ended up in his, like, email inbox. I mean, that period, I'm sure you know a little bit now, for us was just, like, so confusing because I had moved to Puerto Rico and Samir had generously come in to be, like, interim CEO or, like, head of ops. So like really help manage the team, find new hires, like essentially help build the next phase of Yes Theory. Mm-hmm. And his time was limited because Colin and Samir, the channel that he was building with Colin, who's also, you know, one of our best friends, like was really starting to take off. So he was dealing, juggling both Yes Theory and Colin and Samir. Yeah. And I was away in Puerto Rico and, you know, it was just like everything felt very chaotic. And so we put out this application for a job everywhere. Like we hired two recruiting companies, posted on LinkedIn, advertised it on all the platforms, got all these applications in and started doing all these interviews. And I had no idea, like, I mean, we've hired people for Yes Theory before, but it was usually people who were like, you know, friends of ours who hung around us a lot and, you know, we had experience with, so we trusted. Rarely did, except for like specific editor positions, rarely did we ever like seek it out like hardcore. And this, at least for me, felt like the first time that we were like posting to the world being like, we need someone who knows how to run this ship because it's hard ship to run. And I remember before you came on, I had interviewed by that point only like four or five people. But the interviewing process is kind of, it's kind of like a date. It's kind of like dating because you're like, you kind of know instantly if it vibes. And the thing is, you have to keep asking them questions because you can't be like, ah, sorry, this doesn't work for me. So you're on there. Sometimes I was on there for like an hour knowing that this wasn't going to work. Meanwhile, Samir's doing the same thing and interviewing quite a few people. And you were the first person that he reached out and the only person that he reached out. He was like, I like this guy. I think you should talk to him. So out of all the people that he talked to and interviewed, you're the only one that he sent over to me. And then when we talked, the second I talked to you, I felt it too. And I think as soon as I started hearing more of your background, not only what you'd built, but also like you being a third culture kid, there was just like a really instant connection. It felt easy. I think that's the main point. It just felt natural. And I think what's important is a lot of the people that we had interviewed didn't know a thing about Yes Theory. But you know, I didn't realize it had been around the 50,000 subscriber mark, but it was clear that you knew what our philosophy was and, you know, what our content was like and probably had an idea of what things were like behind the scenes. And yeah, I mean, it was like, it was just, I think talking to you was such a sense of relief, you know, that I sent it immediately to Thomas. I was like, don't fuck this up, dude. It's like, do not fuck this up. Like, please God, let this, like, let's be normal. Yeah. Just act normal, act totally normal.
Why were you trying to hide it?
Pretend we're not crazy. Pretend we're not crazy. And Thomas loved you too. And then Amara, and then, you know, I forget how it happened, but eventually we flew you out here and you stayed for some time. So, I mean, it's a long process, especially, you know, for that kind of a position. And I'm not even going to lie, like there was, because I was so familiar with this side of the business in terms of like, you know, trying to like essentially like manage the back end of it, of like, you know, the production side of it, also like the financial side of it and like talking to different people from different teams in terms of like how we coordinate with what Yes Theory is putting out and what Yes Theory is doing. And like how chaotic, because of the spontaneous nature of Yes Theory, things get. You coming from this, like, you know, I mean, all businesses are chaotic, but like more structured workshop with, you know, you like your structure. I hesitated to say, like, just a heads up, dude. This shit's kind of crazy. You know, and gradually I started to open up about it more and, you know, let you know, like, you know, we're not the easiest guys to work with. And you, I think this is what made it like clearer and clearer to me, is you were like unfazed. You were like, oh, I've seen it before. Like, I've seen this kind of stuff before. And that was like, okay, cool.
No, but have you really?
are you sure? Let's talk in a year.
Out of all the stresses I could have with different types of work around the world and doing different things and doing in different industries, this is the type of one that I'm willing to consciously put up with because it makes sense to me. Right. And I think that as these things were kind of unfolding and I was discovering this more and more, like working with you, working with Thomas, working with Amar, working with the team, starting to have different people joining that would shape the team in a different way too. That was when I was basically reaffirming that to me. And it's a common, like, it's something that you always have to revisit. Like every single night, it's like finishing the day and saying like, whew, this was challenging. Does it still make sense? Mm-hmm. And yeah, it does. Then let's continue on and continue pushing. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like any relationship. It's actually interesting that you say all that because one of my favorite things that Mark Manson, who was here yesterday, says mm-hmm. is life isn't about like choosing, like you're saying, like the rainbow is the perfect scenario, whatever. It's really about asking yourself, what type of shit sandwich are you willing to eat? Because mm-hmm. everything is shit. Mm-hmm. Like 70%, like the max you'll get is that 70% of the time it's great. Yeah. But there's always going to be at least 30% of the time that is shit. And you got to be like, you know, you love something, like you said, when you're willing to put up with that shit. Yeah,
exactly. And if that thing is truly important to you, oh, I can bet that any ups and downs are going to be so much more intense mm-hmm. for you because you care.
Yeah.
Like if things go well or if things go bad on a job that you don't care, that doesn't really impact you that much. Like it does. But at the same time, like, what does that say about you? I don't even relate to this place that I'm at. Mm-hmm. But when you're doing something that you really love, the ups and downs have a lot more meaning about you.
Mm-hmm. They affect you personally.
Yeah. I mean, obviously there are people that separate things perfectly. I'm not at that level of consciousness. Mm-hmm. Like I definitely let myself and I definitely valued the job and the work that I put out into the world and that relationship is important to me, for me to feel good about myself, for me to feel like I'm positively impacting society. And because I care so much, the ups are really high, but the downs are also super low, right? And I think that that's the price that you end up paying for doing something that you love.
Mm-hmm.
That is like, okay, like if you want to jump into that, know that it's going to be a journey. Yeah. It's going to have incredible lights. But if you're willing and wanting to have lights, you have to understand that every light casts a shadow,
mm-hmm.
right? And the stronger the light, the stronger the shadow, the more defined the shadow is. Like it's easier for you to see. So that relationship, I think, is what people miss a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And also what people envision YouTubers and this incredible lifestyle that we live like that has shadows and they're super strong. It's hard to deal with them. And that's also something that I really liked on the challenge of working with the S-Theory. That was like, we're bringing so much light into the world that I know that light casts a lot of shadows and dealing with those. Both on a business perspective of like, how do we create processes and organize ourselves and get a team that's spread all around the world to interact and all these like technical challenges, but also on the personal challenges of like, okay, they started when they were on their early 20s doing lots of like these different crazy challenges around the world. Now they're closer to their 30s and they're posting every 2 weeks on a different country in the world. Living for several days. When do these guys live their own lives? How do these guys build the relationships around them? Like as you're approaching your 30s, your 40s, like you're already starting to look at different things that you want to build in your life that are completely different when you're in your early 20s. And I think that journey of like, how do we transition and grow and evolve and do that in a way that is natural for our audience and also inspiring for our audience, because at the end of the day, that's what Yes Theory is about. And what we're trying to do is like, we're trying to inspire people to go out and live their life to the fullest, and living your life to the fullest changes a lot as you grow older, right? What you expect, what you want to create. And I think that that's the challenge also of being in YouTube and having the audience that we have, that is, you never exactly know what the person that is on the other side is going through. And you have to entertain them, but at the same time, being faithful to yourself and being truthful to what you're putting out, right? Otherwise, I don't believe it's sustainable. So I think it's just a combination of many things that I really love and am passionate about. They're hard to deal with. Like, I'm not going to lie, but I think of all the shit sandwiches I could be eating. Like, this is definitely one that I would, I'm gladly eating right now. Don't quote me, please.
Hey, everybody. Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but I just wanted to let you know that the book is currently available for pre-order at seekdiscomfort.com/book. And if you order it during pre-order, you'll get a signed copy by me, as well as a bunch of awesome bonuses, including a live Q&A once a month. And the first one is happening on September 28th. So if you order now, if you're watching this before September 28th, I will hopefully see you in the live Q&A. All right. That is all. Enjoy the rest of the podcast. Honestly, I'd say first thing is that you saying that actually makes me feel good about myself. You saying that you're affected by those extreme highs and those extreme lows, mm-hmm. because, you know, when you're going through it, you sometimes think you're the only one, you know, and like you said, if you really care, it's hard not to be affected. And I mean, I talk about this in the book a lot. When we first start to get views and likes and comments and our audience really starts to grow, you know, this wave starts to build, mm-hmm. and you start getting those first doses of a high. And you don't, I mean, I didn't realize it at the time, but it's like any other addiction, right? It just like shoots dopamine through your brain, skyrockets, mm-hmm. you know, and then over the next few days, you know, if the video does well, still that dopamine dissipates, you go back to neutral, and then you're like, kind of want that again. Like, I want it again. Like, I really like that. And you're like, what's the thing we could do that would get that dopamine up again? And then if you do a thing and you expect to hit that dopamine level, but your expectations are the opposite and the video doesn't do well, or people are unhappy about the video or whatever, like, it is so incredibly hard for that not to affect you. And I think it's also just like brain chemistry. Like, you're just like, I think as humans, we're not meant to deal with that kind of like up and down dopamine rush constantly over and over, week over week. And I think that's why, honestly, a lot of creators struggle. You know, I mean, literally every single creator without fail I know has struggled with burnout, with chronic anxiety, with like mental health stuff. It's just like it's the name of the game when you're in here. You know, and I think the way what I've seen just in terms of how like you coming in and like building a team around us and doing this stuff is like the only way to mitigate for that, the only way to alleviate some of that up and down is to build a team around you that can support you, be in it with you, but also allow you to see and help build things that aren't solely focused on this thing. I think that's when, you know, like when your whole life depends on this channel working and these videos crushing, naturally it's just going to destroy you when they don't. But if you have other projects or other things happening at the same time that can, you know, continue to move forward and go on, I think it alleviates a lot of that pressure. And I, you know, in bringing you on, that was a big part of the goal, is like, how do we, you know, build other things around the content? You know, especially Thomas, like traveling to all these places. And then Tommy and now Stefan and Amar, you know, once in a while we'll hop into the main videos. But like, what we saw is, you know, like, what does it look like when Amar goes off and makes this documentary while Thomas continues the videos, you know, and other people work on Seek, and like managing that growth and those differences and people doing different things, but still being aligned. That alone is such a challenge, you know, and I mean, people don't really know this because, you know, it's not something that we necessarily talk about, but like the amount of grinding effort that you put into Project Iceman to make that thing successful, from like getting into movie theaters to setting up the freaking essentially world tour, you know, and like working with all these different people while still working with Thomas, while still, you know, I think it's like, does it hurt you sometimes when, because you behind the scenes, you feel yourself putting all this effort, like if there is some kind of a backlash or if people do get upset or whatever, do you wish you could be like, you have no idea what I'm giving to this thing? You know, because I'll come into the office, or I guess into the S house, and like, I had one project, just one thing. The book was my sole focus pretty much for 2 years. And so when I wasn't working on it, I could come in and be like, what's up, guys? How's it going? And it was just like, you know, it's like, we got this thing tomorrow. We got this thing over here, blah, blah, blah. And when I was looking at it, I was like, I wish people could see this. Like, I wish people could see the amount of energy and love that gets poured into these things. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to, like, you also don't want to be like, no, we're working so hard for you guys. You don't want to, like, put it on people. But, again, that is part of why I wanted to do this podcast, is to be like, these are the people who are really, like, helping to put this stuff out there and coming up with new ideas and making them happen to really, you know, make the community feel seen and loved. And, yeah, just like, you know, it's a team effort. So that was a long ramble, but if there's a question in there, feel free to answer it.
Thank you, man.
Choose one.
Well, I think there were several points that I kind of like could go off of. The first that I think it's worth mentioning, like when I was joining, I asked you, I asked Amar, and I asked Thomas the same question to see if the same answer would pop up. Why are you guys doing this? Why are you guys doing Yes Theory? Why are you guys doing the Seek Discomfort channel? Seek Discomfort as a company? Like, what's the end goal with this? And I remember that even though very aligned, there were still very different answers. And when I came to the US for the first time, we did a work together that was like a 2-3 afternoon workshop to kind of like, okay, let's pinpoint. What exactly is that? And how does that exist in a way that is sustainable for us? And I remember we got to like elevating the human experience through individual growth and community building and different avenues and types of products and different things that we felt that we could bring to the audience, we could bring to the community that would help them really take their lives to the next level and live what at the end of the day you guys were able to live for yourselves and still are right on a day-to-day basis. And one of the hardest things that I feel when you define something like that and you start looking at like the billion different things that you can do to make those things happen, is to think that you have to play your absolute A biggest optimization game on all of those at the same time and strive for something that you're not willing to give and then fall short on the marathon instead of actually staying at a rhythm that makes a lot more sense and going a longer way. And I think that that was a little bit of what I brought to the team and to the guys and to everybody that is, we could, like, is our goal to hit 50 million views on every video? Is that what we want to optimize for?
Yeah.
I mean, does that have a purpose within what we're trying to do? Okay, like, if we want to start bringing in those amount of views to the channel every single month, are we willing to post 3 times a week? What would that look like for you, Thomas? What would that look like for you, Amar? You'd be having to travel 100% of the time. You would be having to create stories that aren't as in-depth as you guys maybe would like. There are several different things that would need to happen. Are you guys willing to pay that price in the current moment that you're at? And the answer was always a resonating like, I'm not exactly sure that's the avenue that we would want to go. The point is like, what's more valuable? Having a channel that lives for 3 years doing a bazillion views a month, or having a channel that you can live for 30 years doing a lot less views on average. And then the biggest question comes, what do you want for your life? at the end of the day? Like, what are the things that are the most important to you? And how do we create something that gets the word out there and gets this philosophy that we believe in and that we want more people to live by out there in a way that we can continue to do this for as long as we want, right? And that makes sense to you, that doesn't get in the way of other parts of your life. That, and I think that that balance is the tricky part, that we always, even more when you're doing so many things at once, you're always having to rebalance, right? Because balance isn't a place that you get to, like, oh, now I'm balanced, no more problems. Balance is an action. Like, on one side, I'm on one week, I'm going to be, what, last week we launched Project Iceman, the streaming of it on the website. I was doing the math. I worked like 90 hours in 6 days. And I was like, okay, that's 15 hours a day.
Jeez.
Basically for an entire week. And there are several other moments in Yes Theory that I did this. And it's completely unbalanced. It's not what I want for my life. In that specific moment, I needed to do that. And then after, I just reconnect with the idea of this. I love what I'm doing. I believe in the impact that this is generating. And now I rebalance that. Mm-hmm. And I try to bring that equilibrium. Mm-hmm. Because I know that at the end of the day, like, what we're trying to maximize here is for the longevity of what we are building, more than just for the one-time success of mm-hmm. it. And then afterwards we see.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think is very hard. Like, we're living in this world, we're on YouTube, where everything has to be optimized and everything has to grow. And okay, you reach that number and then reach another number. And it's a part of the way that we are also built, right? Where we learn that, okay, you reach that. What's the next? And obviously you always have to have a next step, because that gives us purpose and continuing to go after things, and that brings a lot of value and great things come from it. But at the same time, if you do it without purpose, you lose yourself in the journey. And then 5 years from then, you get yourself going after something that you don't even want at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
You just forgot to update the software over here.
Yeah, dude. Damn, Pedro. I'm freaking inspired right now. I feel like, okay, I mean, dude, this is like, I had no idea this was the case when I started to write the book, but this is like the whole underlying theme of it, is asking yourself what you want. And in starting Yes Theory, my goal was to build a fucking empire. I wanted to be the next Richard Branson. I wanted this thing to be just gigantic and change the world in all the ways, the biggest thing on YouTube, etc. And when I met Thomas, he had like intentionally done his own like solo workshop where he specifically asked himself what he wanted his 20s to look like. Like, if he could what would be the best version of his 20s? And he loved YouTube. He loved to travel and he loved to tell stories. And so he almost created this like diagram of like these different things that he loved, and figured out that just telling stories on YouTube would be like the highest form of excitement for him. For me, I had picked this thing that would like fully fulfill my ego and my need to be seen and like be respected in the world and be a big success. But I never actually fully stopped and intentionally asked myself what it is that I want. Mm-hmm. Like, what is it that I want? You know, and I mean, as you know, I'm flying out to Paris to be with him in a few days. And we were on the phone the other day, and I told him this. I was like, you know, isn't it wild that like the whole thing comes back to me just like realizing that I need to ask myself what I want? And he was saying how for his 30s, he's now done the same thing, where he has three main goals for his 30s that, you know, feel very aligned. And I think that's probably one of the biggest lesson I've taken from all of this, is that Yes Theory, although I helped build it, has in this weird kind of like circular way given me the permission to ask myself what I want. And I think that's what it does. It gives people the permission to ask themselves what they want. And I think that's the beauty of it. And I think what's really cool and the reason that you work so well as the head of ops is because, as you said, throughout your life, even with Pravi, you know, it's like you've made it this, like, you've realized that that's the root of it. It's like whatever anybody does, there has to be like a why associated to it. Like, why are you doing this? You know, these kids in high school that you were helping in your workshops, you know, and doing it with us personally. And nobody who had come in, I mean, like, we had been asked, you know, but it wasn't like this like big thing we had to figure out. It's like, mm-hmm. why are you doing this? Like, what do you actually want? Not like what Yes Theory is and what Yes Theory needs to be and all of it. But you on a, like, Amar, mm-hmm. as a person, like a human, what is it that you want? And I think for... It's when you don't ask yourself that very often and you feel like you're just sacrificing for this bigger thing. I think that's actually what contributes to the burnout and the lack of sustainability, mm-hmm. like you're saying, in a project. Because all of a sudden you start to get frustrated with this thing that's preventing you from asking yourself that important question.
For sure. You know? And at the same time, would you know that you didn't want this path for yourself if you hadn't done it?
Mm-mm. Had to do it.
Right. And in one moment of your life, you made a decision that was a rational decision back then. That was, I am going to start this. We're going to do these 30 videos. It's going to be really fun. We're going to test things out. I have my clothing brand that's going to pop off, you know? And you had to, in that moment, you made a rational decision of trying that because that was what you knew about yourself, about the world, about business. And I like to say that it's a metaphor I use it a lot when I'm talking to like friends and we're talking about this subject of life and decision making. That is, imagine that you're in a room in your brain that is completely dark. You're in the center of the room. It's completely dark. And there's just a spotlight in you.
On you?
On you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you can only see yourself.
Mm-hmm.
When you step in front and you make a decision, you do something in your life, imagine that a spotlight also starts illuminating that place.
Mm.
And then you take another step and it starts illuminating the other place. And you take another step and you start creating a path of light. That is what you know about yourself, about the world, about that room. And the more light that you start to light on that room, the more you can kind of get a general feel of what the room is, but you can't really be sure because you've never been to that other side of the room. You can just see what it looks like from what is illuminated mm-hmm. through your path, right? The only way that you can actually know is if you go there.
Mm-hmm.
And in life, we unfortunately don't have time to explore the full room. We only have an idea. We create a path for ourselves and we only have an idea of what comes to the other side. But every step that you give creates a new perspective of that room and creates a new idea of what the next step should be, right? You would never be able to make that decision of now moving into this direction that you're taking your life if you hadn't done that entire path before,
mm-hmm.
because you wouldn't even know that that was possible. You wouldn't even know that the room was like that. And I kind of feel that that's both the beauty and also the curse of having to make a decision and following in a specific path, because if you could explore everything, there wouldn't be a decision to make because you would already know what makes more sense. But mm-hmm. That's just not how life works.
Yeah. The unknown, right? And also the fact that, you know, you could invest a lot of time in a thing. It's not right for you.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's scary for a lot of people. So it's just better to stay and know the thing you're doing.
You would never know that that's not right for you if you hadn't invested the time to test it out.
Like, yeah.
The best thing that you have is on the current moment that you are, just make the freaking best decision that you can. That's the best that you can do and the best that you can like try to pressure yourself to do in a way. Because if you're pressuring yourself to make a decision that you simply can't make because you don't have enough information there, you're just being unfair to yourself. Like, what can you do? Like, do the research, Talk to the people that you can talk to and that you have in your network. Try to expand as much as possible, but put a deadline to when you have to make that decision. Mm-hmm. And when that deadline comes, make a decision, because you need to explore. You can go up and down in the path of light that you created for yourself, but that's never going to give you more clarity than giving the next step and unlocking that next light, that next path.
Yeah. I mean, even that process of, should I go into the dark or should I just keep staying in the light? Like, that feels, especially this past year and a half, has felt like that for me, leaving Yes Theory, you know, as mm-hmm. a whole. It's like, God, do I really want to do this? Do I really want to just send it fully into the darkness, like into the complete unknown? Mm-hmm. And I think truly, you know, for the first time since we started it, I felt like I fully understood the fear. Like, I fully understood the thing that, you know, people would come and say, like, I quit my job and I went off and did this thing, or like, I, you know, I decided to be a musician instead of being a lawyer, or whatever, you know, like all these different really difficult decisions into the unknown. Because the reality is, what I'd created for myself with Yes Theory was this like cocoon. It was safe. And it was extremely like planned out, like, you know, and I was always surrounded by love and like this family around me and this like team that, even if I made a mistake, you know, I had people around me like that were on this path with me so they could help me out. And now it's like a whole somatic feeling. It's almost like evolutionarily my body is screaming at me to stay in the tribe. It's like, don't go off alone away from the tribe. You will die. You will die. You will die. You will die. Like, over and over, to the point where every morning I have to get up and just be like, it's going to be all right. It's going to be all right. And I think the closer we get in this process of me departing officially, once the book's out, like, that's the day I'm done. The closer we get to that, the more I can feel my body just going, oh, fuck, oh, fuck, oh, fuck. Almost like I'm approaching the edge. I'm approaching the edge. I'm approaching the edge. And you saying that about, you know, this stepping from the light into the dark is really what I need to hear. Because it's, you know, it's something we've said on Yes Theory for ages. But when you say to me, I need it to be repeated to me. Because when fear comes up, it's so all-encompassing and so overwhelming and so confusing that you lose the reminders of that actually happening. You know, like, it's going to be fine. You're going to step out and it's going to be okay. You're not going to die.
Yeah.
And you're still going to be loved and supported, you know, and it's like this constant fight with your biology.
For sure. And I mean, thank you, fear, for trying to protect me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Thank you, fear, for trying to protect me. It was super important throughout the past hundreds of thousands of years that humans have been around. And at the same time, it's still important right now, but it holds us back so much. Right. Are you scared of walls?
Sometimes.
But I mean, this wall. Are you scared of this wall?
Not this wall. This is a nice wall.
Not this wall. Right. Yeah. Walls aren't that important to you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Are you scared of being a failure? Are you scared of, like, all these other things? They are scary and they generate fear because they are important to you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Fear is a mm-hmm. great spotlight towards the things that are really important for us.
Mm-hmm.
And where we're in the state, when we're in a state of fear, we get locked to the present a lot, because the present's what matters, right? I have to run from the tiger that's running, trying to catch me. And this is now. Like, I don't have to be thinking about, how did I learn how to run? And what did my mom tell me yesterday about tiger? Like, that's not what you're doing. You're seeing a tiger coming your way and you're running, right? You're in the present.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in the present, stepping into the darkness and the unknown, we forget that it's the lights that are behind me. They aren't going to shut down.
Mm.
Like, all the tools that I've gotten and used throughout this path, all the people I know, all the connections, all the support, all of that is still there. You're not jumping into the unknown with nothing. Like, you're jumping into the unknown with everything, at least everything that you've ever had. But it's scary, and the fear blinds us from this feeling of, like, I think I'm completely throwing everything away and starting new. But are you? Like, are you really? It's not that. You're just giving another step and you're starting a new match. But you've played so many matches before. and it's not going to be the first time, you know? What you can look at, and I think is interesting, is, and even that is a process, but we were talking about dopamine and how, like, when you're posting and creators and everything, they're posting and they're getting that huge hit of dopamine that is so important to them. So it's almost like an investment portfolio of you putting too many eggs in one basket, right? So that's what I feel happens with a lot of creators. They put so much importance on the validation that they get and all these things of them feeling seen, them feeling loved, that are super important as you're growing up as social beings. But so much of that is on the videos and the relationship that they have with their audience, when it should be in different places.
Mm-hmm.
The relationship that you have with your friends, with your family, with your neighbors, the self-love that you have because you go to the gym and you take care of yourself. So all these other avenues that you can find these things that are important to you that get neglected and put aside. And then when a big change happens on your main source of that, everything else is completely unbalanced, right? And I kind of feel it's the same thing when you're giving that step into the unknown and it's a bigger step than normal. Your body is naturally like, no, I am nurtured. Like, why are you going to unbalance me after I am nurtured? I'm getting everything that I need to be sufficient and exist in the world. And you're potentially risking that and doing something else where I do not know where food is coming from. And that's obviously scary. And obviously your body will want to protect you and fear is going to kick in. The main thing is, like, how can I also do a move like this without changing everything at once? Right? And how can I slowly balance and transition from one place to the other? And you've been doing this like for the past 2 years. You've been writing the book and, like, you're still there, but you're not as present anymore on the day to day. And lots of things that you had before, you've been working towards getting in different ways and from different avenues. This is just another step. The only point is that now you're changing the platform in a way, for so you're not over here anymore. Imagine that you're jumping from one place to the other, right? And when you're walking, doing that less step that you need to do to get from one place to the other, whenever you're walking, there is one specific moment in time where you're fluctuating and you don't have your foot anything and you're unbalanced. But it's just one specific moment of time, and you're going to be going through that soon. And it's scary, but you've been walking your entire life.
Thanks, dude. Wow. I mean, I think even people listening now can probably see why you're good at what you do. Yeah, you're part-time head of ops, part-time therapist.
You can lay down.
No. Pedro, I'm struggling with this. Yeah, but I think, I mean, there is a level of nurturing that you provide that was very, very needed and is still needed, you know, for us as creators and just creators in general, I think, needs to hear more of this. And even talking to you, I know, like, down the line, it's something that you want to do more of, is help with, like, the mental health scene in the creator world. And I think you're just, like, born for it, dude. Because, yeah, even as you're saying this, I could feel, like, again, my whole body just easing, that it's going to be okay. That you're right, I'm not starting from scratch. That I have all this stuff that I learned and all these people around me. So I guess maybe to finish off, like, you know, this is really the first time that you've had this much time in front of the audience and mm-hmm. the community. And yeah, if there's anything that you'd like them to know, that you'd like, mm-hmm. like last words of wisdom that you'd like to leave them with, I think that'd be super cool. Mm. And you can take your time if you want to take a second.
Yeah. That's hard, man. I mean, I'll circle back to two things. One is the book and how...
Thanks, Pedro.
So, shout out to the book. Shout out to the
good
book.
Good job, good job.
That is, I think, a huge representation. And one of the things that I really like when I was reading the book was seeing how a bit of that journey that you went through from the start to the middle to like that entire journey that you were growing through is documented in the book, you know, and it's not something that is lying, just trying to show the lights and not show the shadows. And I think that that's one of the things that I really appreciated. I think there are many moments in the book. I think for the audience that is watching that, you probably don't even know from following Yes Theory, and you'd be surprised about how vulnerable and open Matt was throughout this entire journey to bring it up, bring it to the world. And I think through that, inspire many people to also not try to be perfect and reconnect with their own reasons to doing things. So shout out to the book for that. And I think you guys are going to love it. It's incredible.
Thank you, man.
And then the second thing is also to remember that literally everything that we're doing here at Yes Theory is for you guys. We talk about the community. We talk about the impact that we're trying to generate in the world that exists only when you guys are watching, connecting with the videos that we're making, connecting to the stories that we're making. And at the end of the day, being bold enough to test it in your own lives. And we talk about it every day. We're completely inspired by these stories. We're completely inspired by you guys that are watching. And seeking discomfort and getting out there, living your fullest lives can be very, very, very frightening. But it's only at that other side that you really feel the sense of truly being alive. And I think whoever has gone through that knows. And even though they may explore different types of challenges, they know how good it is to feel alive, and you'll find another way to reconnect with that in your own way. So that's the ending message.
Woo woo.
All right.
Love it, brother. Thank you so much, dude. Good job.
Woo. Yeah.